Back together again. Hey, you and I chatting it up Monday style, February 9th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. I wondered why so many people had a problem with Puerto Rican star Bad Bunny being featured for the previous day's Super Bowl halftime show. Was it language? Was it racial? I don't know. Retired FBI agent and University of New Haven senior criminal justice lecturer Ken Gray offered some of his thoughts on the Nancy Guthrie missing person case. Connecticut News Junkie columnist and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill dropped by with his thoughts on the big stories. And finally, CBS News military analyst and U.S. Army Colonel, retired Jeff McCausland, discussed the ongoing American military strikes on suspected drug-running boats and the recently expired START nuclear treaty between the U.S. and Russia.
You know, when the historians, those wacky historians, when those guys or gals get together and they write a summary or an epitaph, if you will, of Super Bowl Sunday in February of 2026, Sunday, February 8th, 2026, I don't think they'll be writing so much about the game and the action in the game and the fact that the Seahawks came out and really dominated from the opening kick and, you know, they won the game. But I got to tell you, I think the sociologists, the political scientists or whatever, they're going to be writing about a guy named Bad Bunny. And I got to tell you, kids, I'm going to start with this because this is fascinating. It's a Monday. We've got a bunch of stories to get to. But I just put up a question about this on our Facebook page at facebook.com/voiceofct about Bad Bunny. And the responses are flooding in. So let's talk about this. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. I found the run-up to this. The actual day or two before the game itself yesterday, the halftime show, and even with that being done, the reactions still coming in today. Now, I know it's, I get it, it's part of the news cycle. I get it, I understand it. But my God, the reaction of some people, you would think, honestly, looking at the reaction to some of this, you would think it was like a full band of hedonists up there. You would think, you know, it's Satan on drugs, on drums or on drugs. You know, Satan on drums, Beelzebub on bass, Chairman Mao on lead guitar, you know, Paul Pond on rhythm guitar. I mean, I don't mean to be flip about this, but you have to be. And I'm still trying to figure out what the big dust-up was like. And you may say, well, what's the big deal, Paul? It's a football halftime show. And in that sense, it is. It's a guy or a gal. This is not the first time this has happened. There have been umpteen halftime shows for years and years and years and years. That's not the big thing. But the reaction to this is mind-numbing to me still. And you had the alternate halftime show. Why do we need, for example, and I have nothing against Kid Rock or anybody who appeared on that halftime show from Turning Point USA, but my God, does everything have to be political now? Seriously, we're arguing about halftime shows and football games. Well, Paul, he didn't do anything in English. Who cares? Honestly. And the fact that some people actually lost sleep over this thing is mind-boggling to me. Well, you're talking about it, Paul. Yes, because I can't believe it. That we're sitting here, at least I am right now, but this happened weeks ago. And, well, you know, the guy wears a dress sometimes, and he only sings in Spanish. Okay. Is anybody holding any caliber of firearm to your head to make you watch it. Now, maybe you liked it. Maybe you say, hey, let me see what the deal is with this Bad Bunny guy. Yeah, my friend's son is into him, and he downloads the stuff, and he speaks Spanish and all this. All right, whatever. But I just don't get it. Is there a rule that everybody and anybody who's at the halftime of the Super Bowl, is it necessary he speaks English or she speaks English? Is that now in the NFL charter? I don't know. Last time I looked, it's not there. I doubt it's there. Okay, maybe I didn't read the whole thing all the way through, but my guess is it's not there. Please explain this to me. What did people find so off-putting? I guess that's the word I'm looking for here. Off-putting, repulsive, or what? Well, they could have got an American to do. Well, you know what? Last time I checked, Puerto Rico was part of the U.S. I don't understand the craziness about it. Look, let me tell you something right now. I'm a 63-year-old pudgy, suburban, balding, white guy, all right? I am at the upper end of the core demographic for the National Football League. They've got me. Yes, even though I'm a Jets fan, you hear that? That's the sound of me banging nails with my forehead, being a Jets fan. But I couldn't care less who the halftime show is. And here's the bottom line. For a lot of folks that were complaining about it, did you watch the game? That's all they care. And the I was talking about this with somebody here at the station today. We were laughing about it. The era of getting a superstar rock and roll band to play at halftime of the Super Bowl, it's probably done. Most of them have done it. Everybody else is too old or dying. Who could you put up there? Foo Fighters, Metallica, as my friend here suggested, maybe. Could you see a country artist again? Yeah, you probably could, like an all-star country jam or not. But the bottom line is, the point of the halftime show now is to get people who might not actually watch the game to tune in. I didn't watch much of the game last night. I wasn't feeling well. I went to bed around 7. I said, you know what, the first thing I did when I got up this morning, I said, let me go watch Bad Bunny. I'm like, all right. I don't understand what he's singing. Apparently, there aren't any gross obscenities there. And the production value was great. Kind of looked like a show you would see in a casino, right? Come to see so-and-so and his Latin experience. Okay, whatever. And I said, I watched it for 13 minutes while I was having lunch here, getting ready for the show. And I said, everybody was nuts over this. Well, he doesn't speak English, Paul. So what? Get a life. Oh, my God. And I guess about 7 million people watched the alternative halftime with Kid Rock. That's great. Now they're saying, coming up in a few years, you may see 3 or 4 alternative Super Bowl halftime shows. That's great. More for people to watch on delay. So let me ask you this. We already have people calling in. Did you watch the Bad Bunny Super Bowl halftime show? If so, what'd you think? I watched it on delay. I was like, guy looks pretty talented. I have zero idea what he's saying. I'm guessing if he was singing for the destruction of America, we would have heard it by now. My God, people, it's a football game. It's entertainment. The halftime thing is entertainment. It only exists to sell advertising. But what do you think? I had to start with this because I'm reading stuff yesterday and last night. Oh, it's a disgrace. It's a disgrace. How's it a disgrace? Can people just freaking relax? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. All right, talking about the whole thing, and I think this is funny, actually. At its core, I'm laughing at this. Is it that Bad Bunny is just speaking Spanish? Puerto Rican? No, there is no thing as speaking Puerto Rican. I don't know. And by the way, you notice that, and it must be a language thing, because you noticed in past Super Bowls, you've had a lot of rap and hip-hop people up there, very talented folks, but now they didn't sing the songs that way, the games, but you look at some of the lyrics in the past, these people say, and they're at the Super Bowl, but I guess nobody cared, because they spoke English, or speak English. I don't know, I'm just trying to figure this out here, because the whole thing is just hysterical. To me, anyway, maybe not to you. Paul in Bethel starts us off. Paul, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good, Paulie. Good to talk to you.
Yeah.
I go into things like this, and I try not to have any expectations. I don't do my research. I knew that he sang in Spanish. That's all I knew.
Yeah.
And I had a pretty good idea that it's the current style, which is not my style.
Yeah.
I'm into the older stuff, so it's not me. I was riveted to this thing. I loved it. The whole presentation of it, the cinematography of it, I thought it was fantastic. I wish it had subtitles just so I got an idea of what was going on. But I thought it was great. And the fact that they had a real wedding in the middle of it, I thought was brilliant. You know, the whole thing, it was great. Most of my friends on Facebook are right there. They all loved it. Some of them were giving us, you know, like a blow-by-blow about what he was singing about, because
didn't
know.
Okay.
You know, so that helped bring some stuff in. But there's other people out there, and like you said, it really seems to boil down to it wasn't in English, so it was no good.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all. These people are living their lives in a box.
Mm.
I don't get it. I mean, they're so narrow-minded. It floors me.
And Paul,
that I don't expect it.
Like I said, to me, that show, now maybe it wouldn't be on such a scale, but if you or I were in Vegas or Atlantic City or on a cruise ship or something that looked like it had the tenor and the production value, or even a Broadway show, that's what I got out of it. So, you know, it's clear that this guy knew and his producers knew. He's like, listen, Bunny or Bad or whatever his first name is. I don't know his real name. You got 13 minutes. You got to bring it in 13 minutes. Do you realize, Paul, and obviously you do because you liked it, but I'm saying to people, do you realize how long it took to script out that production, knowing all you have is 13 minutes? That's it.
Yeah. I think I remember in the past somebody saying it took 2 years to put it together.
Wow.
I don't know if, you know, that was previous years, but I would much rather watch that than a band of, you know, guys that are good, but, you know, past their prime, just standing there and playing.
Exactly.
I thought this was very smart. I did almost expect him to come out wearing Ralphie's costume from Christmas Story. His name is Bad Bunny, but he didn't go that way, so I'm glad. I don't know why they're calling Bad Bunny, but anyway.
All right, Paul. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, you know, folks, there was production values in that thing, too, with the dancers, especially the ones that were spanking their rear ends. I'm just saying. Don't get mad at me. It was on worldwide television. Oh, man. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Guys and gals, the era of probably, unless you get somebody like a Metallica, but they're too loud. Or you get somebody like Dave Grohl and Foo Fighters, but they're all over the place now. So the idea of a straight-ahead rock and roll band ever doing this thing again, probably not. But that's okay. Folks, you have to understand something. And a lot of you do, but the people that are angry about this, or I'm not going to watch it, or whatever, they need advertising numbers. I'm sure they sold some of those spots yesterday with the realization that, hey, we're going to get a certain amount of revenue, or there's an agreement with some of the sponsors. This is how this works, folks. The if the halftime show hit a certain, what we call a number in the business, or a rating, you know, they would have had to pay even more. It's far more complicated than you realize. It's not just saying, hey, there's a timeout on the field and we'll be back, and somebody in master control presses a button. No. So what do you think of that show yesterday? I liked it. It's not my cup of tea music-wise, but again, I think even if it isn't, right, if you're a human being and you have sufficient oxygen in your brain, You can realize talent. I'm a big music freak. I like a lot of genres. Opera is not one of my favorites, but I can listen to an opera singer and go, wow, that's pretty good. Or something. I'm not a big bluegrass person or a reggae person, but I can say, yeah, that's, I can tell they got it down. It's not something I would pay to see, but. So did you watch the Bad Bunny Super Bowl halftime show, yes or no, yesterday? And if you did, what'd you think? Did you like it, or was it an insult to America? Yes, and part of our aim here, when there's big national news, we'll give you a local angle on that. Joining us right now, one of our go-to guys and gals on this, retired FBI Special Agent Ken Gray, currently a professor of practice in Homeland Security, Criminal Justice, National Security, Emergency Management at the Henry C. Lee College of Criminal Justice at the University of New Haven. Ken, thanks for taking the time this afternoon. I appreciate it. How are you?
Hi, Paul. I'm doing well and glad to be with you.
Yeah, Ken, this Nancy Guthrie case, Ken, before we get to the specific things here, in your years with the Bureau and knowing the people you work with, did you ever work on a case or encounter a case separating the fact out that Savannah Guthrie is a national, nationally known talent, personality, whatever? Did you ever work on anything like this or not?
So this is certainly a rather unusual case. At this point, we actually don't even know if a kidnapping even occurred.
Yeah.
The wording of the second message that the Guthrie family put out to try to appeal to the kidnapper, the wording of that was somewhat unusual and has caused several people to wonder about whether Nancy Guthrie is alive or dead at this point, and if they're trying to do a body recovery. The question about whether this is a kidnapping or not was raised because of all the activity over at Annie Guthrie's home there by law enforcement. So there are a number of different aspects of this that makes it very unusual. But just within the last few minutes, I saw a third message that Savannah Guthrie put out that was asking for the public's assistance in trying to, not only asking for prayers for her mother, but saying that she's still convinced that her mother is still out there and that they're trying to locate her, and asking for the public's assistance and reporting anything strange to law enforcement that might help locate their mother at this point. So any questions that was raised because of the broadcast, the second message that she put out that had the unusual wording, I think was negated by this third message that just was put out.
Yeah, because she said when everybody heard that line, Ken, just please return her to us. We want to celebrate her.
The part that seemed to be very unusual. It did not seem like what you would say when you were asking for your mother's return.
Yeah.
It just seemed more like that you were trying to have closure. But apparently with this newest broadcast and the fact that today's the deadline for making the ransom payment, that that perhaps that it was a misinterpretation or a miswording on her part. Mm. I'm sure the FBI is acting as a consultant for the wording of her messages.
Yeah.
The first one was trying to humanize her, to try to appeal to the kidnapper, to treat their mother as another person. Another human. The second one seemed rather unusual. I don't know if the FBI had as much involvement in that one. This one seemed to be a direct appeal to the public. Help us try to find her.
Ken Gray is the guest from the University of New Haven. Ken, in a situation like this, might there be more communication? And I know there were some TV stations that got some ransom notes there and ransom messages in Tucson. But might there be further communication, say, between the Guthrie family and the FBI and this person or people or abductor or abductors that may have been found at her house, maybe notes that say, okay, here's the deal. Don't say, here's the wording we want, yada, yada, yada. Is that possible or not?
I think it is always possible that there are things going on in this particular case that we are unaware of.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, law enforcement never provides all the details to the public about an ongoing investigation. They want to protect the integrity of the case. And additionally, if you put out too much information, you allow people to get involved in the case that are not involved in the case, such as a person out in California that was trying to extort the family, mm-hmm. claiming to be the kidnapper, was arrested for that claim. And so already there was one specific case where somebody tried to latch onto this case and make some money out of it and resulted in an arrest. But over and above that, it is possible that that the family may have other communications going on. But if that were the case, why would they be using Instagram to make these appeals?
Mm.
I think that I don't think there is any direct communication going on with the kidnapper in this case. I think the kidnapper is using television stations, news agencies, sending the message not by email, but instead through their web-based tips line platform. And the family instead is trying to respond back the best they can, but it doesn't appear like there is any two-way communication. They seem to be talking past one another.
And Ken, the fact that this, whomever these people are, purportedly men, women, whatever, who have purportedly done this, they're asking for Bitcoin. They don't want cash. And is this what, fearing a drop off could be an arrest scenario? The Bitcoin would be tougher to trace electronically?
Yeah, absolutely. So Bitcoin is the coin of the realm of criminal activity.
Really?
And that's because it is somewhat harder to trace. It's not impossible to trace. Mm-hmm. That is, Bitcoin accounts go through Bitcoin exchanges. Here in the United States, you now have to identify yourself when you set up an account. Mm. That's not true all around the world, and that there are some exchanges that do not require identification. But in the United States, they have been requiring here in recent years identification for a new Bitcoin account. But when you do an exchange of Bitcoin, it's registered on the blockchain. That is, Bitcoin is a peer-to-peer, non-centralized exchange system. And any type of a Bitcoin transaction is recorded on the blockchain, but it does not come back to an individual. But you can detect over a period of time activity by a specific account. And that specific account might lead to the identification of the individual, especially if the Bitcoin exchange is meeting the obligation of identification of the Bitcoin purchasers, account holders.
The family, Ken Gray, the Guthrie family has been, I guess, appealing for, and even the FBI folks and the sheriff out there says, well, we want a proof of life. They want something to say she is still alive. And I guess, Ken, what you would do with that, I don't know. I know in past cases they've had people, you know, holding up the daily newspaper, right, years ago to say, hey, I'm still alive and here's proof that I was alive on this day. But I guess in this day, if you try to do that, that could be traced. It could be AI. It could be Photoshop. So, I mean, even that, I would think, Ken, for guys like you, has changed as well.
Oh, absolutely. Proof of life is necessary for two reasons here. One, it's to show that you're actually dealing with the kidnapper, not somebody that is posing as a kidnapper trying mm-hmm. to take advantage of the situation. But two, the other thing is to show that your loved one is still alive and that you are making the ransom payment to somebody that and trying to keep them alive by paying that large amount of money like that. And as you say, in the modern era with AI, it's very hard to come up with something that is that would work as proof, sign of life here mm-hmm. In this particular case. But nonetheless, there are things like maybe a specific mole on the person's neck.
Yeah.
Maybe something personal to them like that, or have the person provide some information about, say, a birth date or something about a grandchild or some information like that that only the grandmother would know in that particular case.
Yeah, and finally...
So it doesn't have, doesn't have to be a picture. Does not have to be something like a newspaper being held up at the time. It could be something only the... Nancy would know.
Yeah, and finally, Ken, to that end, I did read earlier today that something like that would be needed to verify, in fact, that she was alive. And there are people saying, well, wait a minute, she could have possibly, sadly, been already passed away for days. Nobody had any intention of giving her back. This is to just get the money, because when you think about it, Ken Gray, I mean, obviously, Savannah Guthrie is a somewhat wealthy woman, network television personality. I was reading somewhere where, you know, if she needed the money, you would think her employer, NBC, a colossal company, they might put up some, if not most, of this money. So this is just another part of the chess game, isn't it? I don't think the money is the problem here.
Yeah, I don't think it's the money is the problem. I think that, one, the kidnapper is not in direct contact with the Guthrie family. And so they, as I say, they're talking past one another as far as setting up an exchange. Two, the kidnapper, if there is a kidnapper, is doing this to protect themselves from possible detection, identification. And three, you know, we don't know at this point if the person dealing with the Guthries is actually the kidnapper.
Yeah.
Or if this is something else going on here entirely. All these things call into question this entire exchange. But then again, thinking back is historically to the Lindbergh case.
Mm-hmm.
In the Lindbergh case, the exchange went the deal between the kidnapper and Charles Lindbergh went through a newspaper with letters to the newspaper.
Yeah.
And it ended up with a third person acting as the go-between in that case.
Yeah, guy in the cemetery and the money with Bruno Hauptmann and all that. Ken Gray. Ken, as always, thank you, sir. We appreciate it. Thanks, Ken.
Anytime.
Yeah, thanks. All right, you read this gentleman's stuff in the Connecticut News Junkie, Substack.com, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. Terry Cowgill is here. Mr. Cowgill, have you recovered from your dearly loved New England Patriots getting smacked around pretty well yesterday? You all right after this?
Well, I'm actually okay with it because it really was a Cinderella season in
yes.
many ways. Last year they were what 4-14,
yeah.
or 4-16, whatever it was.
Yeah,
and you know, to come back this year
yeah.
with a real vengeance mm-hmm. as they did, I think was a real testament to the great coaching.
Oh yeah,
certainly the quarterback and everything else, and you know. I just think that they've got to do some work on their offensive line. They had the number 66, Campbell.
You're not happy.
Literally got pushed all over the place. He got pushed. Sometimes the defensive line
yeah.
They would push him literally
yeah. well,
back into Drake May and then knock over Drake May with his own offensive lineman.
That's what coaches say when your line looks like it's on roller skates, Terry. That's what
yes.
coaches
yeah.
say.
Yeah.
Before we get to the more serious stuff here, two questions. Did you enjoy Bad Bunny, number one, and what were the snack of choice in the Cowgill household yesterday?
Oh, yes. I mean, the Bad Bunny, he was okay. I didn't
yeah.
know who he was, so I wanted to get a little taste of Bad Bunny and see what he was like. And I think the technical aspects of the performance in the show
yeah.
were outstanding.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't particularly care when he grabbed his junk and did the pelvic thrust and everything. I don't really know what that does. It didn't do anything for me.
Exactly.
But I didn't. And, you know, and then they also had an alternate
yeah.
show.
Kid Rock.
I think
yeah.
with the Turning Points USA.
Yeah. yeah.
Kid Rock. Well, Kid Rock isn't exactly the most wholesome thing in
no,
the world either.
No.
But,
no.
I thought that's a perfect solution because
yeah.
all of these Trump people were protesting about Bad Bunny.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, then do your own show.
That's
and they
it.
Did. Yeah.
That's
I
it.
I say, great. Good for them.
Did we have chicken wings or anything of that sort yesterday?
Oh, no. There were nachos.
Yes.
And flatbread pizza.
Nice.
So my son came over with his wife and my grandson. And, yeah, we enjoyed it greatly. But I'm already looking forward to next season.
Excellent.
And my Celtics. I'm still following.
Yeah, how about my Knicks yesterday, huh? Looking good. I'm loving that. Yeah.
Well, that was not good. Certainly if you're a Celtics fan, they just didn't. They didn't look up to the task. And I think Tatum is pressing too hard. Brown.
Yeah,
is pressing too hard in Tatum's absence.
Yeah.
He's trying to do too much. I think. So.
All right. Yeah. A couple of the serious things here. Mr. Trump did not equate himself well, I think. Now, the blame game is going around with this video that he put out there. And, you know, Terry, this guy, it seems that if 2 or 3 days are quiet, he's got to do something to just even make his supporters go, oh, my God, right?
Yeah, well, his goal, I think, one of his goals when he gets up every morning, if he does get up in the morning, apparently he never sleeps. But one of his goals, I think, is to dominate the news cycle every
day. Yes,
yeah. And, yeah, and he has to come up with something. I don't know about this, and because this is not the kind of news that you want to be dominating with. So the problem is when he was confronted with it, he didn't apologize, and he blamed it on the staffer. Okay. You know, sometimes you can blame things on the staffer. And he said he didn't even see the offending image. That was at the end. But so if that's true, if you actually believe that, that means that a staffer, an unnamed staffer, had access to the personal social media account of the most powerful man in the world. And he can rage post late at night without any oversight or review.
Jeez.
Really? Well, I think that either one of those reflects very poorly on the president.
Yeah.
And so, but any elected official I know, from a first electman to a governor, would have apologized and would have said, you know what, we're taking steps to see to it that it never happens again.
Exactly.
And we never heard anything like that from the president.
No.
I think that a lot of that has to do with his upbringing. His father, Fred, who was also a real estate developer and had this never back down, never apologize attitude. And also one of his Trump's biggest mentors when he was early in his business career was Roy Cohn, who was, of course, was the chief lawyer for Joseph McCarthy and a mentor to Trump. And his philosophy was much the same.
And you don't you don't change somebody when they're 80 years old. You just don't.
No, absolutely, yes. No, certainly not. It's hard to change somebody, you know, when they're my age.
Or my age,
Nothing of 80.
Absolutely, yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And finally, Terry, interesting. Rosa DeLauro covered widely at a forum with local clergy, and I guess she was going at it pretty well and saying, look, we're not going to abolish ICE. And you know what, Terry, and I'm actually reading this now in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. A lot of mainline Democrats, even on the progressive side like Rosa, they don't want this to be defund the police 2.0. And they know that.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, what I would say, I don't think you want to get rid of ICE, although it did expand exponentially. In recent years, I don't know if we need as many ICE agents as we have, but clearly I think the agency needs to be reformed. All right. So, for example, if they want a warrant, they don't need to get one from a judge. They can just give themselves one. I think they're called administrative warrants. I don't think that's right because the burden of proof is very slight when you give yourself a warrant. And also, you know, in the wake of the good killing on the street there, they were asked if they were going to investigate it and or refer it to Minnesota authorities or the FBI for investigation. They said, oh, no, we're going to conduct our own investigation.
Yeah, we're fine.
Okay, and that's kind of like the Internal Affairs Department and the police department, except that I will say that the Internal Affairs Divisions and big police departments are well-trained.
Pretty good,
And certainly on the state police level, they're very good in a lot of ways. But these ICE agents, the newer ones, have very little training compared to the people who've been there for a while. The days for training were reduced from 6 months to 47 days. Mm-hmm. You know, when they were really desperately trying to hire agents quickly. And that always brings up problems. And you never want to be in a position where you have to hire people, lots of people really quickly because things just go wrong.
Absolutely. Folks, you can read Terry's stuff in the Connecticut News Junkie, ctnewsjunkie.com. And his blog is called Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. You can read it at substack.com. Terry, thanks so much. By the way, when you're done with me, Coach Vrabel's on line one for you, okay? So make sure you pick up there, okay?
Okay, and it was the high here was 84 today, so don't get too jealous. I know.
Okay,
the high was probably 11, right?
Yeah, I think we might have tickled 20, Terry. I think.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, you don't want to be in a position where it's so cold that you walk outside and the hairs in your nose grow.
Don't want to do that. Terry, thanks, man. Yeah. Appreciate
okay.
it. There you go. He splits his time between Connecticut now and Texas. The one and only Terry Cowgill right here on WICC. Let's check in with our military expert here. Welcoming back on a couple of big issues here, retired U.S. Army Colonel Jeff McCausland from CBS joins us. Colonel, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Paul, I'm doing very well and glad to be with you.
Well, thank you, sir. Thanks for the time. We appreciate it. Let's talk about a couple of things. Number one, I guess we had another, and I saw the unclassified video the other day. Another one of these destructive attacks by the U.S. On an alleged drug boat. Although, Colonel, are these still happening at the rate that they were previous to what we did in Venezuela or not? What have you learned on this?
Well, no, they seem to be moving along at a much slower pace. I think this is only the second one in the last couple of weeks. Total right now, about 38 of these strikes have been conducted by the United States. Estimates are somewhere in excess of 130 people have, in fact, been killed. But there has been an appreciable decrease in such operations since the capture of Nicolas Maduro. The second thing, Paul, I find interesting about this one was it was in the eastern Pacific. Mm. Now, that's important because if you take out a map, you can cut very easily come to the conclusion that nobody in Venezuela had anything to do with this because Venezuela does not have a coastline on the Pacific, and I doubt they went through the Panama Canal. Mm-hmm. So as a consequence, these boats would be emanating out of Colombia as opposed to Venezuela. And of course, Mr. Trump at times has both criticized and supported President Porto of Colombia, who actually visited the president of the Oval Office last week, and that seemed to be a very successful meeting.
Now, Colonel, in what we know intelligence-wise, these drug gangs, these drug cartels, is it a case of, in nations like Venezuela and Colombia and other places where we think they emanate from, do they not have a fear of whomever supposedly rules them? If they have a governmental official saying, hey, you got to back off on this a little because we may get attacked. Is it a case, Colonel, of, come after us because we don't care. We have product to ship here.
I think it's a little bit of that. Obviously, economics drives the train. Again, in some of these countries, these are so powerful that they actually, deter the government from taking the kind of action they might be able to take, or they just don't have the capabilities to do it in a huge fashion. And number three, and I think this was the case, frankly, in Venezuela, that the government is riddled with people who are at best blinking their eyes and looking the other direction, and at worst are very closely connected with the whole kind of operation.
Wow. Colonel, I wanted to get you on this start. Now, I'm old enough to remember when former President Ronald Reagan was very happy about the Strategic Arms Reduction Talks or treaty that we got out, decades ago, and now that has expired. And so, Colonel, outline what that did, what that may have prevented, and now what happens?
Well, the President Reagan did sign the START agreement, Mr. Gorbachev, putting a limit on strategic nuclear weapons at about 6,000 warheads on each side, as I recall. Then in 2011, actually, President Obama signed a subsequent agreement with the Russian Federation, the Soviet Union having disappeared, that further reduced the limits to about 1,550 strategic nuclear weapons on both sides, and signed that with the Russian Federation, at the time President Medvedev of Russia. That particular agreement had a 10-year limit on it, and so it was due to expire actually in 2021. Mm-hmm. Provisions of the treaty, though, allowed for a five-year extension, and the Biden administration and Mr. Putin at that time agreed to a five-year extension of the agreement, which would be up, which expired on the 5th of February, that is just passed. Now that particular treaty is no longer in effect, and in fact, there are no longer any strategic arms control agreements limiting either side's nuclear stockpile. In many ways, Paul, I would call this the last act of the Cold War.
Wow.
This clearly ends the Cold War the way I would look at it, with the termination of this particular agreement. And the fear, of course, this may open the door to a new arms race that might involve not only Russia and the United States, but a number of actors around the world.
And you know, Colonel, you know, it's interesting that you and I talking here about thousands of warheads and this and the other, and I saw a very detailed report about this recently. But yet, Colonel, I think people, you know, people's eyes glaze over. Just one warhead can do can knock out a city here. So, you know, we have these treaties, but it's just to a lower level, we could destroy the world, right?
Without a doubt. I mean, at the height of the Cold War in the mid-1980s, there were something like 80,000 nuclear weapons between the United States and the Soviet Union. So the reductions have been pretty dramatic. Now, these 1,550 limitations, to be a bit of a geek for a moment, are ones that are actually loaded on a missile or in a submarine or a bomber. There are some reserve warheads on both sides, but nothing like that huge stockpile. Let me put it this way, Paul. We are the country that is the only one that has actually used nuclear weapons in combat.
Yep.
That was, of course, in World War II. And we dropped a nuclear weapon on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Little Boy and Fat Man. Those two weapons, the size of each of those weapons, I could have duplicated with a couple of 8-inch artillery rounds when I was still on active duty. They were about 14 kiloton each. We know from photographs the destruction of those particular city with one of those weapons. Those are relatively small.
Yeah.
Most of the weapons we have today might be 20, 30 times the size of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bomb.
That is frightening. Thanks again, retired U.S. Army Colonel Jeff McCausland. Colonel, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Take care, Paul.
Appreciate it.